Hi, I'm Anthony Campy, driver of the number 81 Waterside Realty Royalties Fast Truck, and you're listening to Real Racing USA.
So, Jack.
Yes.
And we were talking about your weekend in Rockingham. I finally dragged you to a drag race.
Yes.
Kicking and screaming, yes. I don't want to go. And you finally went there. And what was the outcome?
There was 50,000 people there. It was the biggest event in the history of Rockingham Dragway.
Mm-hmm.
And
what did you tell me there?
What did I tell you there? I'm not sure.
You couldn't believe how big the pits were. You actually got lost in the pits.
Well, yeah, it was pretty cool. It was like acres and acres and acres of cars, and it was a completely different atmosphere than a lot of other motorsports events.
And between the corn dogs and sausage, what did Kathy do?
Did she get sick?
No.
Okay.
No.
She was screaming and hollering, though.
Oh, we had a good time. Yeah, it was a good time.
She looked like a kid in a candy store.
Yeah, the place was packed. And
were you amazed at how many different categories, classes of cars?
No, not so much. I wasn't really amazed at that. I expected all that. The thing that I was most impressed with was the professionalism of the people involved, the spectators, and their attitude about how they approached what they were doing. That I really noticed that.
They're well-behaved?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
As opposed to the other?
It was very professional. I mean, you know, just to give you an example, and not to beat a horse to death, but these guys still in stock car racing, especially at the local level, still don't get it. They still think, I mean, you have promoters of racetracks in Florida still defending stock car racers' rights to make asses of themselves on the track, not enforcing penalties for unsportsmanlike conduct and justifying it. Like, I heard this one guy justify it as like, well, we've been doing that. It's a typical thing. Well, that's the way stock car racing has always been, you know, and a lot of things have always been. I mean, we used to make black people sit in the rear of the bus. You know, we used to drop metal flake acid and wear pink bell bottoms, you know? I mean, we used to do a lot
of never wore
I never wore pink. I don't know about you.
I wear pink bell bottoms.
He did.
Bill Hunt says he never wore pink either. Well, come on, Jack.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like there's a lot of things that have changed, and it's like in the sponsorship arena, and you saw that at this drag racing event. You know, it's like this whole thing is so obviously sponsor-driven.
Oh, it's
intensely sponsored.
Just like NASCAR and on the other side,
and,
too. Because, you know, you get a race team, and we were just talking in the fuel categories. I mean, you're over $1 million easy a year. You've got a car, you know, motors are 50 grand, 100 grand or more in those categories. I mean, that's just for a small part on the motor.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. So you said you'd rather talk to some of these other folks and then come back to is that what you
Yeah, either way, or I'll try and get them right now if you guys want to talk to some on the...
Call this guy right here.
Okay.
We'll talk to the folks up there. How are we doing, Rick?
Oh, we're doing all right, I guess. This new Zara radio thing looks pretty cool.
Yeah, that's automation software, and people actually use that to run radio stations all over the world.
Do they really?
Absolutely.
So... never mind.
And you know what, Rick?
What's that?
There was a thing here. Your current boss at the DeSoto Speedway, people don't know Rick works at the DeSoto Speedway on Saturday night as the announcer, has for 5 years.
Going on.
And you know, the guy, you almost had a different boss had you ended up getting hired there still, and his name would have been Tony Amico.
Tony Amico.
Well, guess what?
Tony Amico bought USA International Speedway.
He purchased Hooters rights or their part of the ownership of Lakeland's USA International Speedway.
Now, who are the other owners of USA? It's just minor.
He's the guy who owns it.
Let's
leave
he's
it
the
there.
Majority owner.
Yeah, let's leave it there. And that's effective May 17th.
Uh-huh.
Tony Amico is the owner of USA International Speedway. Nothing will change. Billy Martino will still run the place, and Craig Clark will still be down there with them yeller trucks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we'll still be there.
Is Tony going to make a racing return?
Oh, I hope not.
Well, he's in the promoter side.
But this weekend, I'm going up to Watermelon Country, right?
Watermelon Capital Speedway.
There's this young man who his whole life wanted nothing more in life than to be able to work at Watermelon Capital Speedway, which has had various different names. And now he's the announcer. His name is Billy Goodman. How you doing, Billy?
I'm doing pretty good, guys. How are y'all?
Well, we're fine, man, down here in South Florida. And you're up there in the middle of Georgia somewhere?
Yeah, I'm here in Americus, which is about 30 miles from Cordial.
Are you guys in the area where they're having all the burns right now?
No, that is about a good hour and a half south of us.
Wow.
So you're the track announcer up there, huh?
Exactly.
I'm an announcer down here at DeSoto Speedway in Bradenton. So how did you come about getting to be a track announcer?
Well, this is my third year doing it, and I just happened to browse upon the website, and Mr. Reagan was looking for somebody, and I had a little background working at the local radio station here a little bit, and I said, why not? Let's take a shot at it, and here I am 3 years later still doing it.
I was actually doing a TV show out at the local track here, and they decided they didn't like their announcer out there anymore, and next thing I knew, I was announcing races. But it's a cool gig announcing out at the racetrack. Now, you got a big deal coming up this weekend.
All right, we got an awesome show coming up this weekend. We got the ASA Late Models, the Southern Division will be there. I checked this afternoon. There have been 43 drivers that have pre-registered, so it is going to be an awesome night. Plus, we got our regular race in action with us, so it's going to be a good night Saturday night.
And you're starting 28 cars, Billy?
We usually start 26, 28, some number around that.
Yeah. I know I talked to some of these younger racers down here in Florida who are coming to make their first attempt to qualify for an ASA late model race, and they're a little nervous.
Well, that's a lot of the younger ones say. You know, we only have one water on the outside, and that's the front straightaway. One and two back stretch, and three and four, you got wide open runoff room. Some of them like that. Then again, that some of them scares them. You never know what you're going to run into going down the hill or the field on the back straightaway. You might even make it to the creek in turn three and four. But it's real lightning fast.
Wait.
The creek?
Yeah, over in turn three and four, there is a creek that separates the Speedway property from the Watermelon patch over there in turn three and four.
See, I told you.
So you need a AAA account if you're going to be driving on Cordell's Watermelon Capital Speedway then.
No, it's not that bad. It just depends on how you handle it.
Can you literally go in the creek?
Yes. We had a Legends car going it this past weekend. So you get a good bit of runoff room, but if you can't get control of it and you keep on going out there a little bit, it'll eventually stop you.
Anybody ever made it to the Watermelon patch?
We had one of our Super Street guys actually jump the creek and land in the middle of the field out there. So.
Got his watermelon and then went on with the race.
Is there any fish in that creek?
Do what now?
Is there any catfish in that creek?
No, unfortunately not. Very seldom there's actually water in it. It's one of those dry creeks.
It'll be full, okay.
But I can assure you, it's going to be dry this coming weekend.
Yeah, I'm sure. So, and how long have you been working at the track?
This is my third year.
Wow, that's cool.
I've heard a lot of good things about that track. I've never got to go up there. Fast Trucks ran up there, didn't they?
Yeah, I believe it was about 2 years ago they ran up there with us, yes.
So, you know, this event coming up this weekend is one thing, but talk to us about, like, what a regular night of racing, a Saturday night show up there is like, what kind of classes and what kind of car counts and that sort of thing. Just tell us about what kind of track. Describe the track for us.
No, well, it's a 4/10 mile medium bank speedway, D-shaped oval. We run six classes every Saturday night. We start out with the Bandoleros, which is INEC sanctioned for the little guys. We run Legends, which is also INEC sanctioned. We run Mini Stock, which is more of a modified mini type deal. We run Pure Stocks, Super Street, and we run Claimer cars, which pretty much if you don't want to build your car, if it runs three races, you can claim it for $1,200. Sort of like a new enduro type deal. We generally average on a bad night we'll have about 80. On a good night we'll have over 100.
Wow, cool.
What's your fan count like?
Fan, awesome. I mean, for our area, there's two tracks within 50 miles of us. So for that location, we have an awesome fan crowd. I'd say at least 700, 800 every week.
Now, the two tracks that are close here, are they dirt tracks or asphalt tracks?
We got Cochran, which is a dirt track. We got Suicide Circle, which is a quarter-mile bull ring, which is asphalt.
You got some characters around you, too.
Yeah, you
got Suicide Circle. What's his name over there?
Strolling Nolan.
Strolling Nolan. We had Strolling on a few weeks ago, as a matter of fact.
And we had Arlene on.
And Arlene Pittman, too. Yeah, you got some characters up your way.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
You ain't got no city councilman trying to shut you down, do you?
Well, we got a couple of neighbors that want to give us a little fuzz if we're not through by 11 o'clock, but, you know. They'll get over it eventually.
So how long has that track been there?
If I'm correct on this, 1979 when it was first built.
So it's been there for a while.
Exactly, yes.
What other big events you got going on up there, Billy?
We got the ASA this weekend. The next one we have will be in June, which will have the Georgia Asphalt Series back with us. I'm not sure of the exact date on that. Then in July, we have the Watermelon Festival with Watermelon Festival, which is held in Cordell and Crisp County. I believe we have the National Vintage Car Racing Series and the United Sprints Car Series coming. I believe that's on July the 7th or 8th, one of those dates there. Those are the some major events we got coming up. Other than that, we race each and every Saturday night.
Yeah, I talked to quite a few of the guys from Fast Truck that came up your way a couple years ago, and they thoroughly enjoyed that racetrack.
Yes, indeed. I had a chance to speak to a couple of them. They just the speed of it is what most of them like. The layout of it, they really enjoyed it.
All right, Billy, we appreciate you being on the show with us, and Jack will be up your way this weekend, and we'll talk to you later.
And we'll certainly be talking to you soon again.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, man, thanks.
All right, Billy Goodman, is that his name?
Yeah, Billy Goodman. That's going to be fun. We're going up there Friday night. I'll get over to the track about 11 o'clock Saturday morning, and there's going to be some disappointed people, boy, I tell you, because there's going to be, what, at least 12, 14 guys that don't make the field.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, Jack, I was looking at some, of course, you know, one thing we didn't go over, lost Rusty Dixon this past weekend.
Yeah, it's a tough one, man.
That's a tough one, man, because we've known Rusty for years and with Bobby and all them, so thoughts and prayers are with those people. The other thing that I saw in the news this week, your nasty car thing, to bring up your favorite sport.
You know, when we had Darrell Waltrip on, I was very polite about
it. Oh, yeah, you was very, David Green, too. You were nice.
Yeah.
But I remember, oh, God, it had to have been 8, 9 years ago when you put the colors up for NASCAR and it was similar to the WWE thing.
Yeah,
you remember when you did that? Like 9, 10 years ago? Tony Stewart this past week decided to compare NASCAR to wrestling.
He stole our idea.
Of course, there's a couple other people out there claiming they had that idea first. But if you go to that Wayback Machine or whatever, you can find that original front page, and it's still there.
That's right.
But, yeah, Tony Stewart likened NASCAR throwing debris cautions to wrestling. It's all fake. Now, there was a really interesting interview on the radio today. I know we got somebody hanging on the line right now, but I want to bring this up real quick. You know, I listen to Jim Rome during the day. One of the greatest.
Rome is burning.
Rome is one of the greatest sports radio guys
going.
And he had Rusty Wallace on today. And Rusty literally ripped Tony Stewart to shreds. You know, Jim come on and he said, what do you base that on? How can you say that? He goes, let me tell you something. He goes, one time I was a youngster running in NASCAR, and I thought that, nothing could stop me. He said, Bill France took me in the trailer. He said, son, we don't need you. And I looked at him. I said, what? He said, we don't need you. We send 15, 20 cars home every week. We don't need you. And I'll get it. And Rusty said, he guarantees when they took Tony in the trailer this past week, they told him the same thing. We don't need you.
But you know what? Tony don't need them either. What do we got?
Exactly. Hey, on the line right now, we got Michael Rich from the Hooters Pro Cup Series. Michael, you there?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
So, Michael, what do you think about that whole thing going on down this past week?
Now, you're going to start, Michael.
Hell,
off
yeah.
Just
here
like
we
that.
Go.
What, the deal going on with Tony?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's definitely young and ambitious. I mean, we're not 15 by no means, but it's like you said, if they don't need you, they don't need you because they're sending 10, 12, 9 cars home every week. And, Tony's definitely got an attitude about him, which is good. I mean, hey, Tony Stewart's one of my favorite drivers. You know, he can get the job done, but you can only go so far. You know, you can only push it so far, and then the big wheels step in, kind of like you said, Bill France and those type people start stepping in and say, look, you know, enough's enough, and they'll put you in your place. And, you know, we know Tony makes quite a bit of money, but Tony can go anywhere in any sanction and race. But I think he loves NASCAR, and, you know, he'll probably calm down a little bit. But I love his enthusiasm, and I love the way, you know, black, black, white, white. That's the way I like it. And he don't play politics, and I don't really care to either.
There you go. Michael, Skip, we were talking to Skip Wall, and he was at Concord this past Saturday. I saw the clip real quick on Speed Vision, but he said you had the field covered before you got into that mess with Plemons.
Yeah. You know, I was really sick naturally during the race after I got into the field. And, you know, and I was pretty, I'm not going to say depressed. I was just, you know, down in the dumps after the race, and I was just ready to get out of there and get on home. And, you know, because we had the dominant car by far. You know, we've been working really hard with this team, me and Patrick Wall and all the guys. And, you know, it's taken us a couple of years to finally get where we needed to be, and we're finally getting there. You know, we just don't have the sponsorship and the money a lot of these guys have got. So it's taken me and this team a lot longer to gather our resources and finally put the things in the right place. And it's coming around. Concord is the toughest track besides Bristol that we raced on. It's the fastest track, which is great. You know, it's because it's got that dog leg in the back stretch. And we had a dominant car before, and I really don't know what happened. I hated the call, naturally, because I got sent to the rear when I got in the back of Bill Plemons. But I come off the dog leg. Our car was loose. I had a lot of yaw in the car. It wasn't really sideways, but we just call it yaw. I don't know if that's just a, you know, big NASCAR term, but
That's a High Point, North Carolina term.
It's high tech.
Yeah, yaw. So anyhow, the car was already aiming for the inside of the corner going into, we're just going to call it turn three. Nobody knows what corner that is at Concord. So I was already aimed that way, and I saw Bill, you know, there, and I thought he was going to hold his, you know, position as where he was on the racetrack as far as his point. And I pulled down, he kind of edged down, and I was already aimed that way, and I decided, you know, well, I didn't decide nothing. I realized that I'd done gotten the back of him, and I was running a great amount faster than he was getting into the corner, and I guess I just wasn't ready for the distance to close up as quick as it did. And I think he kind of was expecting me to go to the outside, and I was expecting to go to the inside, and we touched, and I hate it because me and Bill's pretty good friends, and I just hated the call that USAR put on us, but, hey, we'll get him at Jefferson, I guess.
Now, see, that's something different that Hooters Pro Cup does that NASCAR doesn't do.
A lot different. I mean, you know, I understand the reason, because they don't want us to get out there and start tearing these cars up just because of money, you know, bottom line. But you also got to understand, you know, the people that's calling the shots in USAR, that you got to let us race. You know, we don't want to be like, which I love Formula One, but there's no racing in Formula One. You know, I love the technology.
Absolutely.
And the drivers, because they're just a different breed of driving and a different deal of racing. I mean, I love that type of racing, but it's different. And we're short track bull ring racing, and we're supposed to beat, bang, occasionally get in the back of somebody. I mean, why would I spin Bill Plemons out when I'm leading the race? You know, I there was nothing for me to gain. I lost everything by it. And, you know, and they still penalized me, which I am on probation. So, hey, I got to go with their deal. This is their series. This is their series, and I got to abide by the rules.
So, wait, now, set me straight on this. You were coming up on a lapped car, basically?
I don't really know the 15, that's his number. I don't know if the 15 car was a lap down, or we, as the 2018, was getting ready to put him a lap down. And, I mean, the dog leg at Concord, I mean, we're running pretty good there. These cars are pretty heavy, and it's just, I guess I just couldn't get stopped. I mean, it happened so quick. Like I said, I was already aimed to the inside of the corner, and he kind of come down. I went down. He come down a little more, and he kind of slowed down a lot quicker than I expected him to, and got in the back of him.
That track is tricky.
Oh, it's a crazy.
You got sent to the rear for spinning a lap car? basically?
Well, like I said, I don't know if he was a lap car, but he was getting ready.
You were leading the race, though.
Yeah, he was leading the race, and he was getting ready to lap him, basically.
I don't know if he was already a lap down, and we was getting ready to put him another lap down, or he was still tailing the lead lap when, you know, while he was directly in front
of you. Basically, he was behind you, but just in front of you.
Exactly.
Whatever happened to that purple and yellow flag?
It doesn't really work.
Thank you very much.
When they start off a turn, what is turn two, I suppose, at Concord, until they get squared away after turn four, it is...
That whole backstretch and that leg insane. Area is nuts.
I mean, it's like Ocala Speedway down in Florida, but bigger.
Right.
And banked a little bit more. And there's a
big
hill.
D shape, right?
And there's a hill. Were you on probation for those comments?
Well, you know, that got kind of blown out of proportion in one way that I didn't really expect.
I've seen the picture now, by the way, of you and Daniel Skip took. That was kind of neat.
Well, I mean, we were standing there, you know, after qualifying. We had a good qualifying run finally, you know, at Concord. We were able to sit on the pole. And, you know, I, as a driver, has never really been pole material, so I was pretty excited about that, especially at Concord, because, I mean, Concord's a racetrack, you know, get down and drive it pretty hard. But Daniel was parked right beside me as he was impounding cars after qualifying, and, you know, he come over and put his – I didn't know who it was at first. I looked over, and I said, this is Daniel. And, you know, I thought he was wanting to talk, and then the guy took our picture. But, you know what happened between me and Daniel was at Cecil, Georgia, and, you know, I just didn't understand his thoughts on the racetrack at that point in time with 25 laps to go, and he's 6 or 7 laps down from what I understand. And, you know, he's up there racing me and Bobby Gill and – a couple of us, and you know, I felt like we should have won at Cecil. Now Bobby feels the same way, but we had his car was better on restarts, and my car was better on long runs. Well, the cautions kept coming out, and so everything just kind of snowballed, and I got a little bit ill, and I come into the pits, and his car was kind of in front of me, and I rubbed up against it. I mean, I didn't come in there and plow him like Gordon did the 17 car at Bristol that time, or when those guys got into it and spun each other. I just rubbed up against it, which I shouldn't have done because me and him are on a real tight budget. And I was talking to his father, and I told him what I thought about the deal at that time. Well, I was being filmed at that time, and I didn't know it. And, you know, it wasn't for the public to know what I was saying about the situation. And I wouldn't have never said it on television. But, you know, it got out, and it's one of those things as far as that point of the race. And so everybody's kind of got a big kick about it as far as you know, talking trash about me and this and that and other. And I'm usually not in that type of spotlight. I've usually just kept low key and tried to stay out of trouble.
See, now they should always tell drivers when they're being filmed, because that just cost Juan Pablo Toyota $50,000 for a finger move that he didn't know he was being filmed.
It happens all the time. You watch it on television, you watch it, and the politicians are over talking smack. Next thing you know, somebody's filming them. Next thing you know, their career's, you know, it's over with.
The bigger the series, the bigger the fine.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, Michael, it's good to see you running up front again. I mean, you've been with that series a long time, and there's no doubt anybody that's followed the series knows you're one of the most exciting race car drivers in the series, and you'll do what it takes. If you got the car to win, you'll get it there to win. So it's good to see you running up front again, and we want to touch base with you, man.
Well, great, man. I enjoyed being here, and appreciate the opportunity.
All right, man.
Great talking to you, brother.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
That dude's a character, man, and the perfect lead-in for that, too, with the Tony Stewart deal. He liked that.
Yeah.
So
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Years. What are you guys doing, man?
Yeah, we're over here.
Hey, you know what? It's nice of Craig to send these track risky
nice pins, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Rick, next week? Next week, Frank Kimmel.
Yeah, Frank Kimmel.
Frank Kimmel, 8-time ARCA champion.
Uh-huh.
The guy who's putting on this big 300-lap bomber race.
Bomber, whatever they want to call it.
At Kentucky. He'll be back with us again to bring us up
and
to
then
date.
Next week, we're going to have the final skinny on Auburndale.
All the Auburndale folks, yeah. Yep. Rex Guy's going to be
on the show. Rex Guy will be on the show.
The new owners. Matter of fact, they close tomorrow. The contracts and everything are taken care of tomorrow. They take over this weekend, and as a matter of fact, I'm told they think they're going to get the liquor license taken care of on Thursday or Friday and have beer on Saturday.
First time in, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
5 years. Didn't Bill used to do
Bill spent a whole year internship up there.
Yeah, Bill Hunt, our buddy Bill Hunt worked at Auburndale.
Yeah, he sure did.
You've thrown him in some sticks, I'll tell you. Bill's a good guy. What's Bill's website?
Speedimages.net.
Yeah, and of course you can find Craig's stuff at www.trackrescue.com.
Guess who I have on the phone?
Who do you got on the phone?
I have somebody who competes with us in the IHRA Championship Drag Racing. She's from Lima, Ohio, and both her and her husband race, Kathy Fisher.
Hey, Craig, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, my gosh. Doing wonderful, trying to avoid, like, thunderstorms where we are right now.
I can hear that. Well, it's like 90 degrees down here, so, you know, we know how that goes. Tell us about your last weekend. Stevie was just telling me you were runner-up in Piedmont.
Yes, actually, it was our first race out for the year, and we'd never been to Piedmont before, and I had the itch so bad to go racing. I talked my husband into, like, let's go early to a race that's not on our schedule. So we headed down to Piedmont and got runner-up in Quick Rod. So I was, like, really ecstatic. Great way to start off the year.
Now, for the guys that don't know what the Quick Rod category class is, give us a little insight. We know it's 890s.
Yes, 890 is actually the index, and it's a quick rod class in the IHRA, and for NHRA, it would be the super comp class. That is what we need to run in the quarter mile. We're not allowed to go any faster than that, or we could very easily lose. Now, in the eighth mile, like it is at Piedmont, that would be 5.70 seconds like Piedmont was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all the faster we're supposed to run. It's an index type thing. Like, and I heard you earlier in the show talking about all of the other classes, like the super rod and the hot rod. They also run on indexes, just like the stock and super stock. They have dial-ins that they run on, and then there's the top sportsman and, you know, top dragster, and they have dial-ins. Unlike the professional classes, we're not allowed to go too fast. We want to go fast, but we want to go a certain time and not go any faster than that. So we have the starting line and the finish line that we have to worry about.
Right, and when you go over that time, what's that called?
Well, breaking out.
Breaking out.
Yeah, going home.
Out. And going home, too. Hey, tell us a little about you're in a dragster.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about the equipment in there, like the motor and things for those that are, you know, wondering.
Well, in my particular class that my husband and I both run in, the Quick Rod and in IHRA, we're allowed to run whatever motors we want to run. As long as we don't run any nitrous or anything like that, that's illegal in our class. But my particular motor is a 482 cubic inch alcohol-injected big block Chevy. And my husband's running pretty much the same thing, only it's a 509 cubic inch. I mean, you can see people in our particular class that are running up to 632 motors.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about some serious horsepower, but we all have to run the same time.
Right. You got to fall in that time slot.
We all have to fall in that time slot, so we use throttle stops, we use a lot of electronics, we're dependent on Mother Nature and the track and, you know, basically trying to slow the cars down without taking our foot out of the throttle. I mean, there's so much to explain. I'd need a whole nother hour to tell you guys about how difficult it is to run any of the rod classes in IHRA or the super classes in NHRA.
It is. You really have to go back and forth just to get that number where you need it.
Yeah, this actually goes back to the old bracket racing days.
Exactly.
Which I used to do back in the day, and we'd almost kill ourselves standing on the brakes going through the lights.
Right, just because you had to keep yourself from breaking out.
Right.
The one thing about bracket racing, though, that is actually easier, if there's such a thing, than doing any of these super classes in NHRA or the rod classes in IHRA, is that in a bracket racing, you floor the car and you're all the way down the track. You're dependent on the car to run the same time every time. We are too, but we're actually using a throttle stop. So let's say at 0.2 seconds after I launch my car, it goes back to an idle. Even though I still have my foot in the throttle, predetermined amount of time because of the weather, the track, I have put into my, what we call the box, the throttle stop. it will actually go back to an idle, and then it comes back to full throttle again. So we're hoping that we put the right amount of time in there to run the right number. So mm-hmm. we're all on the same dial-in, but bracket racing in some ways is easier because we're flooring it every time, and we don't, you know, use these electronics to try to control the car.
You just put your foot down and go as fast as you can and hope it runs the same time every time.
That's right. So there's, you know, where the difference is between us and the pros is, like, the pros go out there and give it everything they absolutely can with the rules that they have to go with, the weight, what they're allowed to do, the fuel and everything else. We have rules too, but we can actually lose by going too fast.
Now, do you and your husband both race at the same event?
Yes, we do, and race in the same class.
Now, tell us, you know, we were talking about that it's really a family event, and a lot of families are at the track, you know, both in the pits and race as a family.
Oh, absolutely, and when you talk about the miniature cities that set up at these national events or even divisional events, so many people that race at our events, our families, the kids all the way up. We have dogs with us. We have the dads and the grandparents sometimes show up, and everybody has a job, but yet we're all there as one big family. We look forward to seeing the other racers.
Jack.
We're racing them on the track, and we're hanging out having hamburgers in the pit area after we're done.
How many four-wheelers and scooters and bicycles did you see going through the pits? And it looked like a stream of ants, didn't it?
Absolutely. It's just unreal that the amount of people that go to all of these events. And then there are even fans that we see not only at one event, we'll see them at another event in the same region just because they follow what we're doing and they know they can come and be a part of what we do in the pit area as much as what we do on the track. That's what's so cool about drag racing, because the fans can really come be a part of what the racers are doing.
Every ticket is a pit pass.
You got that right. And I'll tell you what, my husband, myself, and any of the other racers that are out there with IHRA could not do what we do and would not feel as safe as we are without Craig and his guys out there at the track.
Well, we appreciate that,
and it's totally true.
And we're going to get into safety here as we talk more, but safety is come a long way over the years, and we talk about all the new new advancements, you know, with the head and neck restraints and
right.
just the advancements in the car itself, the construction of the roll cage and the components, you know, better materials.
Well, the crew chiefs, the drivers, the team owners, whether it be Sportsman Pro or whatever in between, whether it's IHRA, NHRA, whatever, we do everything we can to keep the cars safe, the drivers safe, even the spectators safe, and the track owners and everything else. But if it wasn't for the people like you and what you guys do, like I said, you know, that makes a big difference in what we feel like as drivers getting out on the track when we know you guys are there to take care of us.
Well, we appreciate that. You know, we deal with a lot of drivers all the time, especially with our I Believe program, which was started as a positive measure to get the drivers aware of safety measures and equipment and new ways to protect themselves. And the series have come a long way, too, in mandating, especially this year in IHRA, head and neck restraints are mandatory, and as they are in the other across the pond in the other series as
yeah.
well.
That's right. And it's so important to go out there and know that you're safe and be able to come back the next day. You know, win or lose, we want to come back and be able to do it again.
It's all about having fun, and, you know, it's just an awesome sport.
Well, and not only that, but the one thing that's so cool about drag racing is that from the entry-level bracket racing people, and sometimes that's not so entry-level with some of the big-dollar, you know, million-dollar races we hear about and things like that, you know, bracket racing's pretty serious too, but what's so cool about drag racing is that Grandma can go get out there, maybe not at a national event necessarily. I mean, she could, but, you know, if Grandma wants to get out there and run her car, her Buick, she can go do it.
And here's the thing to remember, you know, a lot of these teams, and I want you to tell us about you, but a lot of the teams, even the pro teams, those guys have a real job. They have either they own a business or, you know, work in a position that'll enable them to get away on the weekend and do this passion. You know, I know with your background, for those that don't know, Kathy works in broadcasting and, you know, worked with us doing some top-end interviews. Tell us a little bit about that.
What was that? Back in 2003, I was actually the pit reporter for IHRA on Speed. It not only showed here in the United States, but in Canada and on a channel called Men and Motors over in England. And after I got to hang out with Craig and the guys at the top end and work with all the drivers and everything, I had a background in drag racing. And after I hung out with everybody at all the national events, I'm like, wait a minute, do I like being with the microphone better or in the car? So then the very next year I got back in the car again. But, you know, and it's just something else to be able to be a part of something that's so big and all the families like Craig was talking about and everything like that. And, you know, with Kevin and I doing it together and having our own business, like Craig was saying, and that allows us to be able to take off and to go do these races because, unfortunately, not everybody can do what we're doing with just sponsorship only. There are some people that are able to go out and even just do the type of racing sportsman-wise and make a living at it, but not everybody can. You've definitely got to have a full-time job on top of it.
Definitely. And, you know, it's where can the fans catch you on the airwaves?
Well, actually, right now I'm just doing television. I'm going to be doing some stuff for ESPN2.
Great.
My husband and I have actually been accepted to be contestants on a new show that's coming up called King of the Strip.
Wow.
It's going to be filmed in Bristol following the NHRA national event in the middle of May. It will start airing in July. There are only 14 contestants, and Kevin and I are lucky enough to be two of them.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I'm going to be doing some different stuff for ESPN, too, like some Mother's Car Show competition and stuff like that. But with our racing schedule this year, that's pretty much what I'm concentrating on between that and our business that we have.
That's great. Well, Kathy, we really appreciate you coming on and talking with us here, and stay safe, and we'll see you out there soon.
All right. Well, Craig, thank you very much for having me on, and I cannot wait to see you at the first IHRA national event that we get a chance to make it to.
You got it.
Take care.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Cool. So, go ahead, Rick.
No, go ahead.
Does she race at all the IHRA events? Or
she races at a fair amount of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to go to every national event and the divisional races, which is the Summit
right.
Pro-Am series. But super individual, her and her husband, and they really put on a good show. And they're consistent. You know, that's hard in this type of racing. You have to be consistent. You know, consistent
obviously,
passes
yeah.
all the time, and just really great.
Just really great.
Oh, far out. Okay.
Yeah. Well, right. What are you going to do, Craig? You gonna call somebody else?
Yeah, I'm going to work on getting.
Who are you going to talk to?
We're going to move up. We're going to move up here. We're going to move up to the
you
faster
you
classes.
Play this?
Yes.
Do I got to play these one at a time?
No.
Just it'll keep
just
playing
it.
That whole
yep.
that window,
yep.
huh?
Just do
okay.
It.
Dayton Andrews Dodge is closing out 2006 in racer-friendly style. Dayton Andrews Dodge on the corner of 22nd Avenue and 34th Street in St. Petersburg, just off I-75, is offering great racer specials for the end-of-year savings. Buy now any new or used car, truck, or van at Dayton Andrews Dodge and tell them you heard it here on Short Track America. They'll send $500 of your racer special deal to Sprint Car driver Greg Leonard and his wife Vera for the David Leonard Foundation. Looking to help racers in need? That's your racer-friendly Dayton Andrews Dodge five-star dealership. Dayton Andrews Dodge, corner of 22nd Avenue, 34th Street North in St. Petersburg. It's the little drive that saves a lot and gives a little more. 727-321-0500, the number to call for Taylor Andrews at Dayton Andrews Dodge. Tell them Short Track America sent you. Evergreen Development Construction Company is more than just a land clearing business. They help you from site inspection to blueprint design and construction. CJ Carberry and the Evergreen crew guarantee your satisfaction in every aspect. Dayton Andrews Dodge is closing out 2006 in racer-friendly style. Dayton Andrews Dodge on the corner of 22nd Avenue and 34th Street in St. Petersburg, just off I-75, is offering great racer specials for the end-of-year savings. Buy now any new or used car, truck, or van at Dayton Andrews Dodge and tell them you heard it here on Short Track America. They'll send $500 of your racer special deal to sprint car driver Greg Leonard and his wife Vera for the David Leonard Foundation. Looking to help racers in need? That's your racer-friendly Dayton Andrews Dodge five-star dealership. Dayton Andrews Dodge, corner of 22nd Avenue, 34th Street North in St. Petersburg. It's the little drive that saves a lot and gives a little more. 727-321-0500, the number to call for Taylor Andrews at Dayton Andrews Dodge. Tell them Short Track America sent you. Evergreen Development Construction Company is more than just a land clearing business. They help you from site inspection to blueprint design and construction. C.J. Carberry and the Evergreen crew guarantee your satisfaction in every aspect of site preparation and facility construction. Call Evergreen Development Construction Company in Tampa at 813-202-8008. That's 813-202-8008. Or give them a shout at 813-478-8847. Evergreen Development and Construction Company, the only company you'll have to call. Evergreen.
Hi, I'm Anthony Camby, driver of the number 81 Waterside Realty Royalties.
Real Racing USA. Coming at you live from the Fumble Inn, formerly the Fumble Inn, now the Snook River Grill, 2505 Manatee Avenue East in Bradenton, Florida. We're back here. Everybody's on the phone, and I'm going to sit here and talk. Bill, go over there and grab that microphone. Go over there and grab that microphone. Make sure. Yeah, you're on. Bill, what's coming up this weekend at Charlotte County Motorsports Park? It's not racing, right?
The Extreme Monster Truck Challenge.
The Extreme Monster Truck Challenge. Are you going to be down there shooting for that?
Oh, I'll be down there on Saturday night shooting some stuff for Bobby.
Well, wait a minute now. Well, what about Ocala? They have extreme trucks too.
Jack, we already had this discussion. There's plenty of rednecks to go around for monster truck shows.
Bring the rednecks on. We're going to crash.
And lots of monster trucks.
We're going to squish some cars.
I had Jane going. Did you see that? Jane puts on the message board that there's a soapbox derby coming up, and we've had our limited box or whatever. She took it so serious. What's up?
I've got somebody on the phone that we all need to talk to. Speaking of IHRA, now we were in Quick Rod. Now we're stepping up a notch. We're going into Alcohol Funny Car.
All right.
These are 250 mile per hour floppers.
250.
Okay. And on the phone, we have the guy who is the current points leader. He's at a couple Last Man Standing awards from Pennsylvania, Terry Monroe.
How you guys doing?
Good. How you doing, Terry?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, guys.
Is it nice and cool up there?
We got a serious storm going on right about now.
God, where's he at? Where are you in Pennsylvania?
Right around Pittsburgh area.
Yeah, it's been pretty stormy up there for a while.
So, Terry, tell us a little bit. Your ride sponsored by Mickey Thompson, tell us a little bit about the engine and what you go through. You know, when you put this whole act.
It's got a blown Hemi in it, and it's somewhere around 3,000 horsepower. Bob Newberry helps us out a little bit on it, you know, some suggestions, and it's his combination with Ken Vinnie, and Jimmy Boyer does the tuning on the car, and we're just 5 years at it, and we're finally learning a little bit, and my driving's going with Jimmy's tuning,
and let me tell you.
Ken Vinnie, now that's a name that's been around Alcohol Funny Cars for a long time.
Pardon me?
Ken Vinnie, that name's been around Alcohol Funny Cars for a while.
He is one smart dude. That's the heads that I run on the car, and I mean, if I torch ahead, I can just drive out this place like an hour and a half drive, and every once in a while, he'll give us a little suggestion. He doesn't hand out everything, but he helps us.
Now, how long have you been racing, Terry?
Oh, boy, I've been racing since I've been 16. I mean, different stuff, bracket racing, and just worked my way up through and kept wanting to go faster and faster.
And this isn't, you still want to keep going faster, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I want to step into tall fuel someday, but, man, that's a big nut to crack there.
Nitro flopper time?
That's what I want to do.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what, you're making some great steps in this. You won the San Antonio event.
Yeah.
And, you know, with your last man standing, which we explained that program a little bit, you get 10 points for being the top qualifier on Fridays and Saturdays.
Yeah.
And that's really pushed you up there. And what's the competition like in your class alone? Like, who you're facing off guys like Mark Thomas and five-time world champion and
yeah, him and Rob Atchison. I mean, them guys, I think they got nine-time world champions combined with the two of them.
Yeah, Rob Atchison from Canada, yeah. And I mean, there's a
there's just big sponsored guys. I mean, it is so tough.
And you know,
hard to believe.
With the introduction of the Nitro class, this class almost didn't exist.
Yeah,
there was a lot of issues with it, and we're glad. Yeah, I mean, this is personally one of my favorite classes, and I'm glad that it's still there, and you guys are put on one heck of a show.
Yeah, I really hope they do, because, I mean, it's like the last time a guy like me could get out there and be competitive. I mean, for me to go with no sponsor like I am now and try to race Nitro, it just wouldn't happen. I mean, this is the last thing that the struggling guy could get out there and try to hang with him.
Tell us a little about your crew, like Porkchop and them. And
Jimmy Boyer, I grew up with him in high school. We used to do some street racing together, and he beat me up all the time.
Let me tell you what, this crew he's got is a piece of work. They are
Porkchop.
They are a partying bunch of people, and they're just awesome. They have a good time, and we were talking about that earlier. That's what it's all about. It's out having a good time with your friends, doing something you enjoy doing, you know, going 250 miles an hour and trying to keep it in one. What's it like when you sit in that car?
I think it's pretty easy, but, I mean, everybody thinks I'm a maniac when I get in there, but it's home to me. This makes me nervous doing interviews and stuff, but...
Oh, you're doing fine.
Terry, do you have any time at all to think in that first couple of seconds when going, I mean...
No, not really. I mean, I actually, you know, 5 years into it, it's starting to get a little bit easier. I'm noticing more things happening, and... But no, it goes by you pretty quick.
Now, do you
one round against Rob when we both shook the tires and, you know, a pedal fest? My guys are screaming at me on the radio, you know, keep going. And when I got to the end, man, I'm glad you heard us to keep going. It's like I ain't hear nothing. I mean, it's you go blank.
Do you ever get a sense of the guy in the lane next to you?
Pardon me?
Do you ever get a sense of the guy in the lane next to you?
Are you aware of the guy next to you?
You know what? Every once in a while, I mean, that last race against Mark, when I had him to, you know, pass the 1,000-foot mark, I'm looking out the side window instead of the finish line, and he just notched by me that little bit. So, yeah, you see guys beside you, but I don't know. I can't really hear a guy beside me or anything, but you know where they're at.
Now, what's the appeal of IHRA versus NHRA for you?
You know what, I've just been with IHRA so long, I just never made a step over, and it's a professional class in IHRA, you know, so if I go to NHRA, I got to get my feet all wet, it's a different blower, I mean, we'd have to learn everything all over again, not that, you know, I'm against that, some, you know, if we had to do it, that's where I was going to go and race, but
go ahead.
I don't know, it's competitive both places, I think.
So basically, the alcohol funny car class is a different class in NHRA versus IHRA?
Yeah, it's not a professional class in IHRA, NHRA. But, I mean, them guys go fast. They got the bigger blowers than us. And Manzo, Newberry, I mean, them guys are tough. But
oh, those guys really go fast, and you just are like so-so?
Oh, 250's not fast.
250's not really that fast?
We're still slackers.
Yeah, slacker.
Right, Gary, if you say so, man.
Right.
Yeah. So, I'm not one to brag or anything, you know. I just get out there and give it our best, and my whole crew's that way. I mean, just everybody gives it all they got, and then we go back and have a good time in the pit. I mean, it's still fun for us, really.
Now,
it's fun for the. I mean, a lot of the people in the stands come down and hang out in our pit area, and it's the one that goes until 2-3 in the morning usually.
There you go. Now, I know on the Nitro guys, you know, every round they rebuild the engine. Do you alcohol guys have to do that?
You know what? The last race in Rockingham, we had bad luck. I blew up two motors. But normally, I mean, San Antonio, I never had the oil pan off my car.
And we thank you for that.
I did the clutch twice in San Antonio, and pretty much it's up to Jimmy. I mean, he does the tune-up deal on it.
Yeah, you just do some of the parts. Like in fuel, they have to literally tear the motor apart. You've got a guy handling each.
Fuel, they have to tear them all
down. We don't get that serious about it.
You just change some minor parts. And
yeah, I mean, like on a real good run, if we run a high 70, we'll pull the oil pan off, check all the bearings, pull the clutch out of the car, service it, put it back in, and Jimmy checks, you know, we do a leak down every run, make sure all the cylinders are good. Of course, if one's bad, you tear it down, put a piston in it. So I usually take two boxes of pistons to the racetrack with us.
And your machine is like 3,000 horsepower?
Yeah, that's what they say. It's something, you know, they're right around there.
I mean,
everybody has pretty much the same horsepower, but it's just learning how to make the clutch work, getting it to the ground. I mean, that's the problem for everybody.
And what's the top fuel? What kind of horsepower is that?
Boy, they don't even know for sure. You know, I've heard anywhere from 7 to 10.
You know, it's amazing because
animals, they don't know.
Yeah, that's amazing because, you know, we've had recently on our show a few times, we've had Doug Rose, who is the owner of the Green Mamba Jet Dragster that he's been running around since the 50s.
Uh-huh.
And his jet engine is a 50s 1950s model jet engine.
Yeah, it's a J46.
A J46, and that's what horsepower it generates. 7,000.
Well, I saw an interesting thing one time not too long ago where they said, you know, approximately 7,000 horsepower in a fuel car, which is 10 times the Winston Cup car.
Yeah.
Yeah, they.
Well, two fuel cars.
One cylinder in a fuel car has got
700 horsepower. Two fuel cars on the line are equivalent to half of a Nextel Cup field in horsepower.
Terry, is that why you do this? Because you like going down that straightaway so fast? Is that what like really draws you to it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it is a ride in the first 60 feet. You know, they say that they're going pretty close to 100 mile an hour in 60 feet. I mean, it puts you in a seat.
And
at least a half track. I mean, you're in for a pretty good ride most of the time.
And we talked a little earlier about tire shake, too, when you get that. And, I mean, it bounces you all around inside there. And you don't have much room in the first place.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions on the tire shake thing. And the best way I could explain it is put a helmet on and put your head in a paint shaker and turn it on. I mean, it's just it's unbelievable.
Wow.
It blurs your vision. Sometimes it even blackens your vision. You can't see. And then you got to lift. But that's a pretty wild thing there.
Well,
we don't like to see that.
we know you guys are on a roll, and you're just gonna keep on trucking and get it down there where it needs to be. We think you guys are an awesome team, and appreciate all the efforts you have working with us, especially in our I Believe program.
Yeah.
And you know, let's win the next one. Next one's in Tulsa.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate you guys giving us the mink and stuff. And I mean, sooner or later, some sponsors got to see us and grab hold and give us a hand.
Name your sponsors off for us.
Then we'll be dangerous. We got Mickey Thompson, Penn Branwell, and Cool Shirts right now.
And your place, Monroe.
Monroe Auto Body, but wife doesn't like to hear that one.
Well, hey, if you're in Pennsylvania.
Where do you live, Terry?
Beaver, PA. We're like 20 miles out of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I know where you are. That's cool. Yeah.
Jack's from that neck of the woods.
I lived up in Erie for a while.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yep, that's not too far from us. You know that.
Yeah, buddy.
All right, Terry, we appreciate you coming on tonight, and we'll see you in Tulsa.
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, buddy, take it easy.
All right, bye.
You know, Craig, he was talking about tire shake. Just recently, we lost Eric Medlin, and his basic thing was that he got tire shake and then blew a tire, and the vibrating in the car caused his head injury is basically what they're saying happened to him.
Correct. And in his particular situation, it was at a test session after the national
event. After Gainesville. It happened in Gainesville.
And he hit, you know, well, the whole deal is tire shake occurs when, you know, they lose traction.
Try and engage the clutch.
Right, and try and get it back. And, you know, the whole thing is you want that car to lock up to the glued surface and just
right. That's
how you get your speed.
All cars do. Like if you have a high powered car, like a, I remember I used to drive a 396 Chevelle, and if you didn't use the clutch properly, that's what that
it would shake.
That's what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Only we're talking about magnified like
and
a
like
thousand times.
Force said, it, I mean, he's been involved in safety since like 92, where he's really been, and they have really never seen an injury like this caused by something like
this.
Well,
you know, again, we were talking about safety earlier, and any time that something happens, unfortunately, we learn from it and advance safety from there. Now, from
right.
his case, Force got with some of the seat designers and the top ones, and just like within, you know, Blaine Johnson going mm-hmm. back a ways, they've added, the titanium plates
behind him, yeah.
On the sides to protect the driver from things coming in from behind them. Those structures are very strong on the wing. Those generate in excess of 10,000 pounds per square inch of downforce
yeah.
on the tires. And, you know, a lot can happen with the wind and the speed involved. I mean, you're putting all those G-forces going down the track 300 to 320 miles an hour in 4.5 seconds. So you imagine what it's doing to your body.
Mm-hmm.
So plus the restraint
system.
Your guts
are touching your spinal cord.
Exactly.
It happens to your body when you're standing there watching it.
Yeah, there's something else I wanted to ask you about, and it's something new in racing. I believe IRL is first start is the ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
Ethanol. Now, what? How does that burn? What kind of things do you have to go through now?
E85. It's a mixture of. It has a little gasoline in it. Gasoline besides methanol or
ethanol.
But methanol alcohol.
Corn brewings.
Alcohol.
Corn squeezins.
It's alcohol and gasoline basically.
Yeah. Corn squeezins.
And it can be a little difficult to put out. And it's one of the new. Things that we're working on as far as
the thing that that's what I've heard though that this is a tougher fire to put out
it is
than
tougher.
A gasoline fire or a nitro fire or an alcohol fire.
Yes, it is, and with the different technologies and foams, you know, the particular one that we use is called FireAid. There's several out there, and we'll do some testing with it. Several of the teams, especially with IRL, are running that, so their methods of suppressing fires before were adequate for what they had, but now we're changing the mix a little bit, so they've got to keep up with technology.
Right,
and
they were
equipment.
Basically methanol,
exactly,
you know, fire
straight alcohol,
yeah.
And you know that by itself can be challenging sometimes. But over the years, you learn how to deal with those situations, just like we did at Lakeland that night with 50 gallons of methanol from the PRA big car.
Yeah, I heard
the
about
old
that.
Silver Crown and
or 100 gallons of high-octane fuel that night at the Sarah race.
Every one of those cars is a 55-gallon drum going around that track in the big car series. So, yeah, it can be challenging.
So, Craig heads to the phone.
Yeah, when we got there, we got a little tour. Craig took us on a little tour around Rockingham Dragway, which is right across the street from
The Rock.
The Rock. And
former NASCAR.
But they're down there, man. Everybody's coming down when they – would get to the end. We were way down, like a mile down the, you know, the track, and guys were coming over. They're inspecting them, showing them their helmets, going through their cars, making sure everybody had the right stuff. It's pretty cool.
The right, they all love Craig too.
Jack got the ultimate the $1.50 tour.
That's
of the
right.
complete facility.
That's right.
First thing is, where's the concession stand? Got to check out
French
those.
Fries.
And what did they have up there? What was good?
What was good?
$18 French fries. That's what he told me.
Oh, yeah. Kathy fell out. Kathy, it's a national event, man.
Were they a little pricey?
No.
I don't know. We usually bring our own.
I did not think so. I mean, $2, $2.50.
Craig carries the cooler.
Yeah,
we carry our own cooler, and we also carry connections to the announcers, someone who is in the mix now who is, help me, Stevie LaTemp.
How you doing, guys?
What's going on, guy?
Those French fries, they might have been a little pricey, but where else can you enjoy such cuisine?
Absolutely.
They are awesome.
Is this the Cajun announcer now?
No.
I gave him a 5-star rating. I mean, I really rate this food either.
This is Mr. Racing. This is the guy that announces the races at the national events.
I know that.
He is sportsman. He knows it all. This is the walking textbook encyclopedia of racing.
Oh, my Lord, my head's swollen up now.
There, now we can't get you in the radio show.
What can I say?
What's going on so what was your spin on this whole last event? Was we had good weather, it was nice and warm, and...
Craig, we couldn't ask for a better deal. It was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday deal, and we had sunshine, temperature in the 70s. The track just prepared to absolute perfection. And you talk about flying, had over 500 cars there. Like I said, heard you say earlier about 200 pros. These guys were running some stout numbers out there. The top fuel cars dropping down to 460s, 310, 315, 320 in that range. Excellent, excellent side-by-side passing. Some of the best sportsman competition anywhere, bar none. When you get into your stock, super stock classes, oh my. Many of the legends in drag racing were there. Guys that started way back in the 50s and 60s, still doing it and still putting the wheels in the air and doing an absolute awesome job of driving.
It was, and we had Kathy Fisher on the phone, and we just had Terry Monroe talking about what it's like to be in a funny car going down the track and what it takes to get the team together.
Well, you know, I was involved in that in my younger days, and so I know where he was coming from and stuff. And I will tell you, to drive one of these, Terry makes it sound like, you know, it's really not that big a deal. But I can tell you from experience that when you climb in a funny car and you lower that lid down on you, your vision is now restricted to about 30% straight ahead of you. As far as looking out the side, you can twist your head a little bit, and you might barely catch a side of you, but it's not like you can turn around and look down, you know, back down the track and say, where is he at? And basically, when these guys get in these cars and you stand on the throttle, the tires start to grow coming out from the water box, you know, it's just an incredible rush. You literally, as I say, slam back in the bucket. You're not going to lean forward. I don't care who you are. And a lot of times you tire shake, you know, and that is a violent, violent thing to experience. And that's something that no driver wants to go through, but a lot of drivers are skilled to the point that they are able to withstand and go through it. Now, sometimes it's so violent you can't, but in the case of Terry and some of the other guys that I know have driven through it, and once they drive through it, they're usually on a really, you know, a stout ride. But an example, I guess probably the best way to explain it, the paint shaker, that was pretty cool, but we were down in Texas, and I was talking with a couple up in the stands, and the man was just, he watched, because you could look at the track, and you could actually see the rubber, where it shook so bad, you see black space, for probably 200, 300 feet, and they're just, you know, you could see that the car just shook uncontrollably, and I was telling the gentleman, you know, he asked me what that was, and I said, well, that's what they call a tire shake. And he said, well, wow, he says, I just can't imagine that. I said, okay, here's a way to always remember it. When you go home today, get your trash can, put it over your head, give your wife a ball peen hammer, and turn her loose. If you survive that, you just survived tire shake. Scary part was,
I saw a few fans like that.
Scary part was, I said, would you do that? He said, I can't wait. I looked at his wife. I said, would you really hit your husband, you know, the trash can? She says, I can't wait.
I can't wait.
She said, says, yeah, but I won't be using a ball peen hammer. I'm using the sledgehammer.
But no, that's a good example, I guess, to the extreme. But it is very dangerous, as you know, the accidents that have occurred from it. And it can knock you out. It is really, really brutal.
Tell us a little bit about what it's like to be in that crazy, insane asylum that we call the Tower. I went up there to see Satch, the race director, and it's like you got the announcer there, you got the race director sitting next to him, you got the other gal on the other side with the computer running all these numbers.
There was a lot of activity,
and it was nuts up there.
Absolutely.
How can you keep? How can you just? You know, it's got to be insane just to keep your concentration.
Well, what happens? I think, Greg, is the fact that you become so engrossed. What's happening, I don't even hear anything else after a while. When I look up there and I see the next two cars coming up on the screen and I realize who they are and everything, automatically my mind goes back in time and I start talking about them, you know, about their history, what they've done, where they've been, and where they're headed in drag racing. You know, are these former champions? Where are they at in their points and so on? And I just get wound up into it where, I mean, you can turn the screen off after a while. In fact, they used to play tricks on me, but I'm not used to it. It still happens. I had Aaron Paul come up, who is now the president of IJRA, actually come up and put a bag over the screen one time, took my microphone cord and hog-tied me, and said, there, now talk about it, you know. So I leaned forward where I could look around the screen, and I just kept right on talking because It's something I truly love.
Poor Stevie. You know, they short-sheeted his bed, too, and they've done a few other things.
Yeah, I've built my bed with rocks and stuff. We're a real family.
Well, that's what we were talking about, too. It's a whole family environment, and we're all there to have fun. And, you know, the competing part of it, I mean, they get serious, but they're still having fun, you know.
And the thing to remember is just like even though we have a menagerie going on sometimes in the tower because there is a lot going on, there is an awful lot to make this race run. There's a lot of seriousness there, but we truly are all family. We all help each other. Whether I'm announcing and my race director, I call him Uncle Satch. If he needs something, I'm there for him. He covers me sometimes. He'll remind me about class calls or whatever it may be. And the same way with Carrie, who works on the computer, or Renee Bingham, who's the lady that makes sure all the names and numbers are all taken care of and the payouts and everything. We help each other. It becomes just one massive it was teamwork, just simply teamwork.
And see, what a lot of the fans, you know, like in a stock car race or whatever, they may have the computer system, you know, with the encoders that when they pass, the transponders, when they pass the on this one, they have to enter the number of each car. It's all computerized, and, you know, the timing system is pretty sophisticated.
Steven, you're doing those interviews. When the guys would do their runs, and they would, I think they were doing the qualifying type runs. When, there was interviews done with drivers, like, shortly after they had done their run. What, did you have somebody down at the other end of the track? Is that where that was happening?
No, actually, at Rockingham, I was probably at about the 300-foot mark on the return lane, and we were bringing the cars down in front of the fans. And we were in competition for the last man standing.
Right,
I heard you mention about that earlier.
Right.
Well, as the drivers would reach the top of the pivot to where, even though it wasn't over, we thought they might be it. So we'd bring them down, and we'd put them on the spot and say, we got four more pair left to go. What do you feel? You got a chance of picking up these bonus points.
Yeah, it was cool.
Plus a paycheck. But, you know, and so we wanted to get the fans involved so that they really understand how important this is. And many of the drivers will tell you, these bonus points on a Friday or a Saturday night could decide a world championship. In fact, Terry Monroe has already picked up a bunch of points, and he is currently points leader. And in a little while here, we're going to talk with T.J. Sizzle and Top Fuel, and he'll be the next one to tell you. He's picked up some of those points, and that's what he also is currently in the points lead. This is very, very important.
I was amazed by the fact that these guys had just went down the track at like 250 or 300 miles an hour, and within just a couple of moments later, they were being interviewed, and they seemed so rather calm for half the. It just seemed a little odd, you know.
Well, most of them were calm, all except for T.J. Sizzle. Now, whenever you get him on the radio a little bit later on, I assure you, he will be an interesting interview. T.J. gets wound up. When he got those 5 points, came down there, he grabbed my microphone from me, jumped up on the guard wall, and started talking to the people. And
you never get wound up.
He was wound up. And you got to remember, these guys, there's a lot of adrenaline going in these guys. They get, you know, they look very calm and cool and collected. But I'll tell you what, they're really wound. And now, I will tell you this. Whenever, it's a strange thing, they'll be extremely tight right before they go down the track. But when they get in there, they light the candles, they bump it into the beam, blood pressure comes down, heart rate levels off. I mean, they become very calm, very relaxed, because there is, you cannot make a mistake. And they're professionals, whether it be in the sportsman category or being the pros. And when light goes green, they're all business. Now, when they go through the traps, reach up there and they pull the chutes, you know, and the laundry comes out, you know, all of a sudden, at that point, then that's when the blood pressure goes up, you know, and they start getting wound up. I've seen them come down on the top end of the drag strip, and Craig will verify this. Sometimes they're jumping up and down in the cockpit. They're so wound up and so happy. But I guarantee you, until they've crossed that finish line, they're very, very serious. And they need to be, because this is probably the most dangerous sport in the world. When you get into fuel cars and stuff like that, you got to remember, this is about the best way to put it. It's like a bomb that's going to go off, whether it goes off at the beginning of the quarter mile or the end. That's the decision, you know. And so they're riding on a stick of dynamite going down the track. Because nitromethane, I mean, that is extremely volatile.
It's a controlled explosion from the time they started up. And as I told them earlier, we started on alcohol, the engine, and then they introduced the nitromethane mixture.
It's so violent on
motors, you talked about horsepower, that whenever they do the burnouts, you know, you see the smoke go way up in the air and everything, that's only on one fuel pump.
Right.
When they back them up, and a lot of times, next time you get a chance to watch these fuel cars, you'll see the crew chief go up front or by the motor, and you see him reach down in there. And what he's doing is usually put a piece of tape on the second pump so it doesn't vibrate loose. They'll pull that tape off, and they'll open the pump. And when you listen to the motors, that's when they sit there and they go from pop, 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 to pop, 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 pop. They really start kicking hard. Well, they just added 500 more PSI of fuel pressure to this thing. It has two lines, and these lines, I want to say, are about 1.5-inch fuel lines.
Here, they're huge.
Now, visualize 2.5-inch fuel lines at 500 PSI plus. And the guys that race out there on circle track racing and stuff, you know, you guys run your Holley carburetors at 7.5 to 8 PSI, and you know what kind of pressures, you know, that it has on it. Well, from 8 PSI, visualize a fuel car as, instead of a 3/8 or a 7/16 or half-inch line, they're running 1.5-inch line, two of them, at 500 plus PSI. And so it's incredible how dangerous it is out there. Even if a line was to break, it could kill you.
So the tree hugger people ought to really love stock car people. We don't burn so much gas.
Exactly.
Steve, the IHRA event at Rockingham, is that going to be broadcast on Speed this weekend?
I'm not sure what the date is for that one or not, to be real honest with you.
Okay, I think it is. I'm pretty sure. We'll check on that.
I believe so.
Sure.
Or it might be.
Right. I just don't want to promise it.
Yeah, no, I think it is, but we'll check on that.
Well, Steve, it was great talking to you. I'm glad you came in here, and as I told everyone here, you're one heck of an announcer, and the walking knowledge book, and the ambassador to racing, especially in the sportsman division, and we're going to work closely together to keep us in touch with what's going on at the race. And
I will tell you this. I don't know if there's just enough time to get in one thing, that sometimes Craig Clark hates me because I pump cars so fast and so hard at him. And I know he can skin me alive, but you need to know, Craig, I love you, guy. You're part of my family.
Yes, Steve, it is this Saturday. It's May 5th at 2:30 in the afternoon.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. You guys need to be there. If you want to feel the hurts, Jake, hey, watch Speed.
And all I can say to you is hot rod, hot rod, hot rod.
That's right.
And bring him to the lanes.
All right. To play.
Stevie, appreciate it. Good talking to you.
Thank you.
I loved it. Thanks for having me, guys.
See you in the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That guy sounds cool.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a whole different world, though. I wouldn't. You know, I grew up drag racing. That's what I started out. I worked out at DeSoto at the drag strip. Worked on the starting line, drove the wrecker. What he was talking about the black marks on the track and stuff.
Yeah.
We used to go out and they didn't have reverse. We used to have to go out there and push the dragsters back. And, you'd be pushing them back, and there'd be a guy in front guiding them back because they can't see behind them. And you'd step in that rubber, and you'd leave your Converse All-Star sitting there on the starting line. You'd have to go run and pull it off and take it.
You want to go with me? You want to go down to Immokalee? They're doing IHRA stuff down at Immokalee. And from what I hear from – and Steve, I didn't bring it up here, but even Steve – but everybody I've talked to says this guy who's promoting that place down there, and I forget his name right now – is one of the best promoters of motorsports that they've ever met. Steve said that today, too. As
really?
A fact.
Yeah, we might have to go down and check that out.
Yeah.
I haven't been to a drag race in years.
Okay, right, we're speaking of fast times.
How fast?
And not
how
at
fast?
Ridgemont High. We're talking fast. We're how talking fast? 319 miles per hour, and what was it, 4.6?
4.64.
We got TJ Zizzo on the line.
What's happening today, guys?
How you doing up there in Chicago?
Just doing the business side, sports, sitting in front of the computer, pushing numbers and finding out where our next dime's coming from. You know what I'm talking about.
Let me tell you what, this guy is awesome. We've watched him and
I was told this is the guy we're going to have to. He's kind of quiet, reserved.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to have to pump him up a little bit, I think. I don't think I had to when he was at the top end because he jumped up on top of the cage and was going wild. And you know, we can always see your car coming down the track. Why is that, TJ?
Because I have pink parachutes?
That's it. We know when you're coming, buddy. And let me tell you what, you were flying through there. I was like, when did you pull the chutes? Like 1,000 feet past the finish line?
You know what? Unfortunately, in this business, I find myself driving about 3 to 4 tenths of a second past the finish line usually.
Yeah, and giving me a heart attack.
Our crew chief doesn't like that at all. He sees that, you know, parts are very stressed at that point. So he doesn't like to see me do that for my safety and for the engine's standpoint. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you know what? It's fun. It's a fun ride. I'll stay in that throttle till the baby comes apart. That's my job, isn't it?
That's it. It's to get it down the track and get it down there fast. And you guys have made some big steps here recently. You've got the sponsors. Tell us about your sponsor.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We have a new sponsor aboard. Wordsmith Media owns the corporation that produces a lot of magazines out there, but they have just produced a new magazine called Race News Magazine. It's one of those magazines that looks similar to a racer magazine, where it's a lot of color, a lot of good photos, and a lot of good articles on racers. And we're excited to be able to promote their product, and they're excited to be affiliated with us. So it's a win-win situation, because at the racetrack, they are able to pass out their brand new magazine that will be on newsstands in a couple weeks here, and at the same time promote the sport of drag racing and, of course, their own product. So it works out real good.
We just had Stevie Letemp, the announcer, on here talking about the fuel systems, especially on the fuel cars, and you know how much fuel is going through there at one time with the pressures. And tell us just a little bit about what it takes to get that car prepared before you make your first run. You know, you've got a guy each guy is assigned a certain part of the motor.
Yep.
And you guys literally tear the motor apart after each run and replace parts. And tell the fans a little bit about that.
It's an orchestrated mess. That's what it boils down to. We have 12 crew members that pour their heart and soul into this deal. We bring it back into the pit area after a run. The thing is, some of the parts on the car are still 1,200 degrees. They're ripping through them, tearing the clutch apart, tearing the engine apart completely down to the bare block, and putting it back together within 75 minutes. All new parts will be put at it, pistons, rods, supercharger. We could, if things go well, we're able to use the manifold, we're able to use the engine block, we're able to use the bell housing. But everything else is all new and ready to go, which we have serviced. So what happens is we have everything on rotation. We have all these engine parts on rotation. We have about 6 of everything, because we'll make 6 passes during the weekend. So we'll bring 6 of everything to the racetrack and hope to use it all up. It's pretty amazing. These things will consume almost 6 gallons of fuel in 4.5 seconds.
Wow. And you got, I mean, your trailer in the pits is literally a parts depot shop.
Exactly.
Because you have to carry multiple parts of...
No doubt in my mind. And this thing is a rolling workshop. There's no doubt about it.
Now, do you have... A lot of the teams, I know they'll have... they have like a spare motors setting in there. I know some... It all comes down to budget at that point, right?
That is correct. We are fortunate enough to have a very big budget for the year. So we're able to have 4 engines with us at the racetrack. We will pull... one out, meaning we'll have one in the car and we'll have one sitting in our pit area ready to bolt in at any given moment. Now, hopefully you don't have to use that. This year we haven't had to use our spare bullet. We have just replaced the internal parts on it. So that has worked out good for us this season. But, yeah, for those fans who have never seen drag racing, they watch it on TV, that doesn't do it justice. Come out to the racetrack. It's an amazing sport.
Now you got to do that. I just did that for the first time, and, I've been covering stock car racing pretty intensely for 10 years, you know, as part of the media, and I went up to Rockingham, and next thing you know, I'm standing there right by the wall as you guys are taking off, and I'm trying to take photographs and get video. It was an awesome experience. I hate using that word because it's overused. I don't have any words to explain it.
Jack's heart is still pounding from that picture.
As a matter of fact, I watched some video I took. I watched this video clip I took of you guys in the Top Fuel. And I got on my computer at home the other day. I was showing my kids, and I got the same feeling all over again.
Goosebumps.
Absolutely.
You know, it's pretty amazing. I've been driving a Top Fuel dragster now for 4 seasons. I drove a Top Alcohol dragster before that for 13 years. So I got a lot of driving experience. But I'll tell you, when our car is pre-staged, not pre-staged, meaning we are in the water box, behind the water box, and the Top Fuel dragsters ahead of us are going down the racetrack, when they leave the starting line and I got my helmet on, I'm in the car, I'm strapped in, I still wince. And I still tell myself, TJ, you do that? You're nuts. And this is years later, you know.
Wow.
It's amazing. It is amazing. It's, you know, being blown off your ladder there trying to take pictures, I can imagine, was pretty intense.
We were talking about the fans in the pits, too, you know, that they can come right up. You know, each trailer will have the little strap across where they're working on the car. So fans are literally within, you know, 10 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Watching this, and when they and when you guys you know, start your car up in the pits, tell them usually what the fan what happens to the fans.
Yeah, is that amazing, guys? Is that amazing or what? No other motorsport in the world can you get this close to these cars spewing out nitromethane. It's hilarious. I have a little mirror so I can see behind the car when we warm it, because for those people who don't understand, when the driver is in the car, we warm the car in the pit area. We started up. I can't see behind me other than a little mirror, and I see all these fans. They think they're really tough. You know, they get up behind the car, and they're ingesting this nitromethane, and they think, oh, yeah. And next thing you know, you see them crying, dropping to the floor, dropping to their knees, trying to get out of the breeze, you know, or get into the fresh air breeze and out of the side of the race car, because it kills you. I mean, we all wear masks.
If you've ever been pepper sprayed, it's about as close as it gets.
Yeah, exactly. It's cool. It's very cool.
Yeah, this is even worse.
So, Jack.
Bill just said something to me about it's like sprint cars burning your eyes, and it's like.
Oh, no.
No,
10 times that.
There's not even any
smartest guy in the world, and I'm not the smartest Italian in the world, but I think sprint cars run on methanol, don't they?
Right.
Yes.
Right. There's no nitro.
Well, that's what you start your car on, right?
Well, you know what? We actually started our particular car, we started on gasoline.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes we turn it over to methanol if we're just going to warm the engine a little bit and then switch over to nitromethane.
Ah.
Yeah, it's a very complicated process.
Okay.
Yeah, so methanol, we run about 15% methanol, between 15 and 10% methanol. And that's you get a little tear from there, but now the nitromethane and the propane is what really kills you, because that's what basically the mixture is, you know.
Now, in your class in IHRA as opposed to NHRA, what you guys are running, what percentage of?
Well, we're fortunate. We're able to run up to 90%, which is very, very good for parts, you know, not breaking. The reason I say that is I'm hesitating because we ran 90% in NHRA for a while. Then they, after Darrell Russell's incident, they really wanted to kind of control the power of these cars, so they knocked them down to 85%. But what happens is crew chiefs are very intelligent people, and what happens, they want to make as much power as they can, so they figure out a way, okay, how are we going to make more horsepower with 85% nitromethane instead of 90% nitromethane? And what happens is you just end up squeezing these engines to death. So with that being said, running 90%, it's much easier on the engine combination, for sure.
TJ,
and that's the big difference between IHRA and NHRA, and that's the only difference. The only difference is we're able to run 90%. They can only run 85% at the NHRA. Other than that, same cars, same configurations, same engine combination, same cars, same everything.
How long have you been doing this, TJ?
Well, the day I turned 16, my parents, both my mom and dad, which are both supported me over the years, said, you know what, we got an alcohol dragster here. Your dad's been driving for a long time. He's getting kind of old. At that time, I think he was like 40, you know. Why don't you try this? And, of course, I'm 16 years old. I'm in high school, for God's sake, a junior in high school. The only thing I had ever driven was a Ford Escort. So I'm like, sure, I'll take my dad's alcohol dragster out. Let's go. So the first time I stood on the gas, it was just 60 feet, you know, no big deal. I climbed out of the car and I said, Dad, what's so hard about this? Let's keep on going. So from that point on, I drove his alcohol dragster. I probably did that for about 8 years, and then when I graduated from college in 1997 or 8, we decided to put a two-car team together in the year 2000. I was out of school, I was making a little bit of money, we were able to put two alcohol dragsters together. So then my dad had a car, I had a new car, and we competed against each other. That was really fun. Actually, we were just having some dinner just now with our crew members and talking about the old days, because a lot of our crew that is still with us today have been with us since I started driving, so it's pretty neat. It's pretty exciting to being able to sit around the table and still share stories of crew members that have been with us for 14 years and volunteering a lot of their time and making a lot of sacrifices for it. So it's exciting.
How did you make the
long time?
How did you make the move up to the fuel car?
Stupidity. I say that, and I'm glad you guys laughed with a chuckle, because what I know today and what I did 4 years ago with my dad, I would have never done knowing what I know today. We took a gamble. We, a little corporation up here that makes washer solvents, Champion Packaging, they, one of our crew members grew up with the gentleman who owns the corporation. He said, you know, I'll give you guys a little bit of money to get us started in this thing. We sold our alcohol dragster. We had a little bit of money. We got a little sponsorship from Champion Packaging, and we had a little truck and trailer with a Top Fuel dragster. We bought it from Tim Wilkerson. We went down there, and you would think because I was involved in drag racing, I would really have a lot of knowledge on a Top Fuel dragster. I knew absolutely nothing, nor did my dad or the crew members at the time, because we were always in our pit area working on our top alcohol dragster, so we never had the opportunity to go and see what a Top Fuel dragster really was. Well, we saw this thing. There were so many bells and whistles on this car. And Tim Wilkerson, who we bought the car from, said, TJ, we'll help you along. You know, I will go to the race with you. I'll get you started. And until you don't need my help anymore, I will continue to help you. So my dad and I came home with one of our crew members, and over some chicken wings, we said, you know what? Let's do it. Let's just do it. We got nothing to lose. I'm not getting any younger. My dad's not getting any younger. We got a little bit of money, and when I mean a little, I'm going to say a word, and I mean I'm going to say a number. It was $50,000. Now, $50,000 now buys you a couple engine blocks. That's about it, you know? So we really didn't know what we were getting ourselves involved in, but all of our crew members from our alcohol dragsters, because we had two of them, combined for one team on a Top Fuel dragster, and it's been interesting ever since, I will say that for sure. So that's where we got involved with the Top Fuel dragster. We just decided, you know what, let's do it. Let's just do it.
No going back, right?
When you're at the track and you're actually in the middle of the day with the competition, are you thinking about the competition, you know, your competition, what they're doing, or are you just totally focused on what you guys are doing?
In the back of your mind, you're always thinking about your competition. There's no doubt about it. You have to prepare yourself for who you're going to run, because let's keep in mind, drag racing, there's a lot of mind games that go on. Surprisingly enough, before you stage the car, as you're staging the car, there's a lot of mind games being played, surprisingly enough. You know, you do it in a nice fashion. You don't mess the guy up next to you. But there's things that every driver does a little different than the next guy. So in the back of your mind, you're always thinking about your competition, but that's probably about 10% of your thoughts. 90% of your thoughts are concentrated on one thing, and that's your car. We have a joke around here. We have a 30-foot leash on our car, and that's the car's only, you know, the car's about 30 feet long. So that's the only thing I get to see is a dragster that says Race News Magazine on it all weekend long.
Well, that's awesome. TJ, we think the world of you, and you've got a great crew, and we're going to look for some more great stuff here coming up in Tulsa. And just keep it going as you're going.
I appreciate it, guys. It means a lot to us. Surprisingly enough, we're a team who doesn't have any full-time crew members, and we're just out there trying to have some fun at this. And I think that's the name of any motorsport. You try to be competitive as you can, but if you're winning or losing, it really doesn't matter. You need to have some fun with it. So that's what we try to do.
And really, and at your level, that's great.
Thank you.
Cool.
Have a good day.
Hey, thank you very much.
Have a good night.
Wow. Drag racing's fast.
Fast and furious.
We only lost a half an hour tonight.
Well, yeah, we had a meltdown with what?
Meltdown.
Was that a power strip over there?
We had a serious
Come
power
on, blame
surge.
It on me. I know, because it's the first time I've been back.
2 years of doing shows, Rick. 2 years worth of shows here. We haven't had any problems like
No
this.
Problems at all.
Craig comes back to join us again after 8 years.
It's the safety factor.
Yeah. You know what? The way we had everything rigged together, it wasn't safe.
Wait a minute. You said it rigged. You had it rigged together. Jack, this amp is like from 1949.
No, see, that takes me back. For God's sake. That takes me back, Jack, to the first demolition derby I ever ran, ever. And I was going to win this damn thing. There was only three other cars running, and my car died on me. This is at DeSoto Speedway. So I cranked
you
it
You were going to win a four-car demo derby?
No, there was 27 cars started it. There was only three left running.
Okay.
I fired it. My car stalled. I fired it back up, and it started backfiring. Well, I cut the exhaust off right there at the engine. Well, it started backfiring a little bit, and Craig's guys saw fire. They saw fire. They put me out.
We hosed him down.
Oh, no. Are you kidding?
They killed me, yeah. My first memory of Craig Clark in track rescue.
They killed me.
And then we used to do the show together. For people that don't know, we Craig worked with
the early days.
Three of us worked together with Hans.
Hans Niebuhr. Man, I miss Hansi.
Oh yeah, the little Hansi.
The Hansi
at the Pure Radio. The Pure Radio was a
where were we? We're at the fair.
Remember this one?
Yeah.
AM 590 or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah, out there on the pier.
1420 or 1390.
One of those.
Then we did Garage Radio.
Garage Radio. That
from
was
the
a lot
underground,
of
we have
and
erupted.
You came here to the Snook River Grill, with, right?
Right. Well, back then it was
the Fumble
Inn. Yep, the Fumble Inn.
The Fumble Inn. The Washington Redskins.
And
grill.
You still had the same amplifier back then.
No, this was his real amplifier at home that he was playing music to.
Yeah, exactly.
It has an 8-track attached to it for those of you who can't see it.
It's a little.
And it has tubes.
It's yellowed from back in the old days of smoking.
Next week, we're going to have some more drag racing people on next week. We're also going to have Frank Kimmel on. We're going to have the Auburndale Speedway new owners on. Who knows what else?
There's new owners?
Yes.
New owners of Auburndale.
Yes, the Guy family. Rex Guy will be with
Rex
us.
Guy.
They close tomorrow. And that's what we're talking about. And they're getting a beer license so they can sell beer.
And JT's riding off into the sunset.
Wow.
Yeah,
you know, we did that one for a few years.
Yes.
So has John Barker met Rex Guy yet?
He knows of
him. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Oh, he's God. Like,
push the button, Rex.
Push the button.
Turn the volume up. Well, another edition of Real Racing USA in the books. Even though we're short of half an hour. Craig, it was great seeing you,
good
brother.
Good seeing you again.
It's great
we'll
seeing
see you.
See
you next time.
All right, man.
All right, bye.
We'll see you next Tuesday night right here at the Snook River Grill, 2505 Manatee Avenue East in beautiful southern Tampa Bay. Good night now. I was thinking about a woman that loved me. I never the dreams I've seen lately, they keep on turning out and burning out and turning out the same. So put me on a highway and show me a sign and take it to the limit. One more time. Now you can spend all your time making money. You can spend all your love making money.